Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. Today's guest I have wanted to have on the show for a while now because of her expertise in people data and DE&I especially. But please welcome Sophie Bearley with Philly Shipyard. She's here today. She's going to talk a lot more about herself, her career journey, people data, what that means, and the importance of diversity and inclusion in employment, and especially in manufacturing. Sophie, please introduce yourself. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Anne. I'm really excited to be here today. As you mentioned, I do DEI and culture strategy for Philly Shipyard, a mid-sized manufacturing organization in Philadelphia. And before that, I worked at a DEI research and consulting company that basically did both community and business-specific research across industries, including manufacturing, on employee engagement, HR policy, and diving into strategy plans to address the major findings there.
Excellent. Yes. And I can't wait to really get more into that side of things, because we think about DEI in manufacturing specifically, at least I do, because that's the industry that I work in. But absolutely, there's so much other information and data that we could be leveraging as far as people and demographics go that we could borrow from other industries. And I'm really looking forward to getting into that a little bit more in the show today. Sophie, I got to give you the warm welcome of Workforce 4.0 before we get to that.
Oh, thank you.
And I got to ask you, if we were out somewhere and we were at a trade show or we were at an industry networking event, and we were like, let's go do karaoke. I gotta know what song you're singing.
I've thought about this. I have never done karaoke out at a trade show, but just in case it does happen. I don't know if you're a Chapel Roan fan. She's become big pretty recently as a female pop singer. And I love her song Pink Pony Club. It actually came out a few years ago. It's like a ballad, it's a pop song, it's everything in one. I think it gets all the feels, so that's my go-to.
I'ma keep on dancing at the pink.
Yes! That's why I'm so glad you know it.
So I'm a newly discovered fan of Chappelle Roan. My sister-in-law turned me on to her. She's a huge fan. She's like, we've got to go see her in concert. And so we've been listening to her music just very recently. She's been on my radar, but that's one of her favorite songs is Pink Pony Club. So I'll have to tell her about this.
I learned it at a drag show a couple years ago, actually. And it was like, I had no idea who Chappell Roan was at the time. And it was just like an amazing song. And now you hear it on the radio. I was proud of her.
It's really good. And another song that I think people probably know now because it's in the Target commercials, but maybe they don't know that's her, is Hot to Go.
I didn't even know that was in the Target ads. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I'm pretty sure it's in the Target ads now. And it's, of course, I get the Target ads, but that's a popular song.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Well, we'll see if we're both at a trade show together, we'll have to do karaoke and we can do all the Chappell Roan songs.
I will definitely get up there and do Pink Pony Club with you.
Oh, perfect.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Sounds good.
That's a good one. So getting more into the conversation here and the purpose of why we're gathered for the show today, there's a lot to be learned from people and people data. And I don't think that we really have... First of all, we're having a hard time grasping data from machinery. This is all still a pretty new concept, but people data and people analytics, that's somewhat been around for a while, but it really is becoming the new wave in utilizing and leveraging that data to better serve our workforce? And in your experience working with people data, what do you think it says about improving the workforce? Do you think there's any telltale signs or there any indications that you look for when you're analyzing people data?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with just saying that people data can mean so many different things. So we can talk a little bit about a few different types of that. There's employee engagement data, there's like diversity dashboards if you're thinking about the recruitment side and the hiring side, and also turnover, performance reviews. I think we actually got connected originally through SECI, which is recognition-based people data. So there's absolutely a lot in the people data space that you can use and learn for. And I think just tracking anything is new outside of just who are we hiring, but what are they saying? What are they communicating? How are we communicating with them? But I think, of course, some of the major things we notice are prioritizing how that data impacts our recruitment strategies as well as retention strategies. And then I think moving beyond that, tools based on recognition or performance evaluations can do a lot to track productivity and succession planning as well. So to me, people data is really about empowering employee voice through a system to really catch down on that equity piece. Because otherwise, you just like, who did you hear from? Which voices are louder? And of course, that can always exclude certain people in the room who aren't used to being in that space and don't have other people who look like them in that space.
Amen. Yeah. And the way that we're capturing the data, it's a digital version of the suggestion box in a way, in some cases. But data can tell you a lot about your employees in different ways than maybe the suggestion box idea would. It can also teach you more about yourself, I think, and really using data as a tool for self-evolution is powerful. Have you ever seen companies that successfully have done that or taken that approach with maybe their leadership or training and development methods?
Yeah, absolutely. When I've done employee engagement data across companies, I think one of the key things that we always look at is supervisor support and leadership perception. Because I think so often we see, you know, the old style of a performance review that is just top down. And, does your boss know how well you're treating everyone below you? Not necessarily, because they might not have those interactions. So focusing on giving people an opportunity to speak up. And what you do see is, I think it really helps you focus in on who needs support, whether that's specific teams or specific areas, or also maybe specific people. Something we consistently see in employee engagement data is the need for more caregiver support, including directly from their management and supervisors. So I think when you take a look at all the different groups of people reporting up to their managers and how that differs from the entire team, it really enables you to focus in. And then you can figure out if you need to work on training, or you need to work on communication, or do they need to work on HR policy, a variety of different areas from there.
And are those kind of some examples of the care support for employees, or what does that look like? For just the normal hourly employee, what's a situation that do you think?
Yeah, I think caregiver support is related to benefits and having fair living wages to support someone with their family in that region. And then also, as we started touching on that management interaction between how are they supporting work-life balance when there's a need that comes up for my kid's sick, I need to be able to pick them up early for a doctor's appointment, even when you're not sick, all of that. As an hourly employee, you're subject to certain standards. You're supposed to be there at a certain time usually and leave at the same time as other people. And caregivers often need to, it's not that they don't want to work or can't hit all the hours, but they might need to just tweak a little bit where those hours lie at times. Having a little bit of flexibility and direct support is really huge for caregivers. And then outside of benefit, or specifically in benefits, I know we talk about like childcare subsidies or on-site childcare, a lot of things that really novel, strong leaders in the DEI space are doing for people with children and their families, or people who are supporting adult dependents, whether it's their elderly parents or adults with disabilities in their family. So there's a wide range of things that you can do, but I think the biggest thing is to talk to your employees first and figure out what's affecting them, because there's often a lot of things you are doing right. And if you just go in and make changes, it might affect, you tweak one thing here and you're going to lose something from another area. As long as it's really tailored, you can see that impact.
Yeah, I know we were talking about a little bit about being sick before the show today. How big, from a broader macro approach to DEI, is childcare and how that infects your female workforce? How big of an impact does that have?
Yeah, it's huge. I don't have exact numbers, but when we think about single mothers and single parents, one of the things that always comes to mind is that they have some of the highest rates of poverty of all other groups across demographic areas when you look at census data, just showing that especially single moms supporting one person, you have so many more expenses under the single income and just the lack of flexibility. No surprise, it's really hard, or people have to end up taking a part-time job often in order to balance all the needs of supporting their family and still having an income, being able to get to work. I think that's why there's a huge role from the business to support their employees in terms of, or any flexibility that you can give hourly employees. If you offer a paid parental leave or even just PTO for someone to be able to use that time for not only their own sick leave, but someone else in their family's sick leave. Yeah, but we really see it. And actually something I've noticed looking at turnover data with companies is that you often see higher rates of voluntary turnover with women in the organization compared to men. And I think that's because when women, this is me speculating, but I think that's because when women are seeking to balance so many other things, they're going to make choices about where they work more than maybe other groups will.
Because do you look at a job description and the hours specifically say 12-hour shifts and it's, I can't, there's no way that I can do that. I mean, well, I'm doing the math, right? I'm like, okay, so Phoenix's bus leaves at 6:30 in the morning and it gets back at 3:30. And that's, so then, okay, so I hire somebody, then so you calculate that into the equation. And childcare nowadays is not $20 and a pizza. I don't know who needs to hear this, but it's not $20 and a pizza. It depends on who you can find, but somebody that's a babysitter that you would be able to find is probably going to run you $12 an hour up to $20 an hour.
Yeah.
And when every time I travel for a show, it's $1,000 for me to leave the house.
Yeah. Wow. Just on childcare. Wow.
Just from childcare. And yeah, it's astronomical. I don't think a lot of people probably understand that. It's not anybody else's problem, but I think we have to be super aware of that, because when we're facing these challenges in recruiting,
absolutely,
and we're trying to attract a wider range of employees, we have to be cognizant of the fact that single women cannot work 12-hour shifts.
Oh yeah, absolutely, you know? And I think there's a lot that like a business specifically needs to do to support, like offering different shifts, offering flexibility or different hours. But I think businesses also have the opportunity to collaborate with community stakeholders in their region, with local governments, with education systems, with workforce development boards, to let them know how important it is for you, because these are things that supporting childcare access and affordability are things that almost every region has some people working on. There's never enough funding for it. So being a part of that solution can go both ways. So maybe you can offer different flexibility, but maybe you can support agencies who can have a closer childcare site or provide transportation that works better for your employees, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you think, and this is totally ad hoc here, but where do you think in relation to other industries, maybe that you've worked in or seen or conducted some data analysis, where do you think manufacturing is on that range when it comes to being more flexible?
Oh, absolutely. Manufacturing has a harder time with flexibility than other industries. Depends on the industry. Of course, like industries like technology, they have a lot of options because a lot of technology you can bring at home, but you just can't bring a CNC machine home. You just can't. But there are
even if you could, it would be extremely difficult to plug in.
Oh yeah. I don't know where you'd put it. Yeah, there's a lot bringing it back. Yeah, I can't imagine. But yeah, but compared to other industries, there are like other frontline working based industries that do have some similarities to manufacturing. Specifically, I've noticed a lot with healthcare. I'm working with a few different organizations and how it's just you have some people who are on the job. They don't have a computer to be able to go and access different things to easily. If you don't have a computer for part of your work, then that means that you can't do a whole lot of your work from home. But I think it also just impacts communication strategies and a whole wealth of other categories that affect an employee's experience.
Definitely. Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Yeah, it's something that's
interesting.
Yeah, it's something we see a lot in the manufacturing space, really trying to offer more support for your workforce, is that support only goes as far as you can communicate it and ensure that the employees have access to. And I don't know about the different organizations you've worked with, but we have some younger generation, some older generation. Phone works sometimes for some people and it doesn't for other people. A lot of them can get their emails, but maybe aren't the best at finding them. So it's a hard balance of if you have this great policy, you have this great program, but sometimes then companies find out our employees had no idea we had this great leave policy or we had this new initiative because you know, they see their handbook once or at orientation. And it's hard to make sure that at a larger organization, all those different changes get back to them. So sometimes there's so much a company is doing that their employees just aren't aware of and can't fully utilize.
Yeah. And you don't ever think about those things, I don't think, in orientation. I think you're thinking about, okay, these are the job requirements and we're going to walk the floor and there's a lot going on and we've got safety. Here's the PPE that we need. But it's always like you want to put other things before yourself. I think it's like human nature. So you put those aspects of the things and then maybe you like forget to look at that stuff.
Absolutely. And I just like picturing being that new hire who's there and you're nervous on your first day. And I've seen that with every company. You do a great job of offering everything at orientation, but then you've gotten content on 8 different categories. Some are safety related and some are that could be like something I'll look into later, but they don't all have the time to go do that. Especially if they're an hourly employee, they might not have on the job time to go through their handbook and double check things and have someone close to them they can ask questions about that support. Things can fall off, or let alone, you know, an employee who's been here for 6 years and now you start offering some great new benefit, but making sure that they really know about it, not just check the box, you got an update, but learned about it, were able to ask questions, have HR answer questions, all of that can be just a lot harder to communicate when people are on the floor and you can't just send everyone an email and assume that they read it. But in every industry, you can't send anyone an email and assume they read it, even in some of our more tech-savvy industries, but it's that much harder for frontline workers.
Definitely. Yeah, interesting. That's some really interesting takeaways that you shared. Thank you for that. When it comes to recruiting, if we switch gears a little bit, and still focus on some of the other industries that you've maybe touched or worked in previously, are there any key alignments between those industries and the manufacturing industries when it comes to recruiting and retention of employees?
Yeah, so I can't say that I've worked on recruitment strategies with other organizations, but I think there are some recruitment strategies that I've worked on with manufacturing companies that apply in general, which is really trying to engage at the community level and treat recruitment and treat looking for new employees as every facet of how that person goes about their day. Like, where are they seeing the ads? How have they engaged with or heard about your company beforehand? What reputation does your company have? Do people know about it? What do they think of from anyone else in the community who's heard of your company in the past? So really trying to make sure that you are a part of the community and that you're sourcing from, so that there's a lot of trust. between the people who are looking for a job and the people who are trying to offer a job, because we're back and forth in our labor market. I don't know if we're over or under on hiring, but I think at the end of the day with manufacturing, skilled candidates really have a lot of choices. So it's really important to meet them where they're at and let them know that they're going to have a great long-term experience with your company, because they have other options if they are a skilled candidate.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're certainly preaching to the choir there for that stuff. And of course, there's like the classic argument, people don't want to work and all of that. They do want to work, but they want some long-term career assurance, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think at least in our industry, you can't, there's so many jobs that are so demanding that you, like, you're not coming to work if you're not, if you don't want to do that. You know what I mean? It's not like you're like coming into work to hide in a corner, sit and relax. So my job is mostly on a computer. That's so much easier to get by compared to lifting heavy equipment, if you're indoors and outdoors and weather conditions. You have to be highly motivated to be there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think with the employment gap that we're facing right now, it's so important to be able to bring more folks into our fold. You know what I mean? Into that community. And not only getting the word out on long-term opportunities or what the company benefits are, all of that good stuff, but also on things that kind of speak to other demographics of people. I know we were just talking about women, but minorities, other demographics of people, it's so important to embrace them and bring them into our sector, I think, for not only the industry, but for the business, for the product, different things like that. But I got to know, DEI has been such a hot topic the past couple of years. From your point of view, why is that important? What do you think is the biggest value of having a more diverse, equitable, inclusive workforce that people can really get away from this conversation today?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it can be very polarizing how it's been brought into a political topic, even though the goal is we understand there's so many different people out there and they have different needs to be supported. And a lot of companies have been struggling with lately. I've seen of, do we keep this up or do we back off right now amidst the election and how relevant DEI is? But there's a lot of really great companies that are staying the course and keeping at it. And I think it's because they, you know, they understand how, like, yes, it impacts recruiting. People want to work somewhere now, especially younger generations, where they can see themselves, they can see their friends, and they know that they're going to fit into the bigger picture at a company. But also, on that retention side, like, people leave when they're not supported. The top reason that people leave jobs is always from lack of management support or lack of work culture, way more than it is for pay, which is some of the common misconceptions around retention strategies. But when we have different groups in that same space, sorry, I'm blanking up a little bit there. So okay. We can edit that out, but I think I really wanted to hit on the focus of retention there. And especially because not only when people are supported, whether or not they leave, but it's how they bring themselves to work on a given day. So it's that productivity piece, the creativity piece, and innovation. So are people coming up and doing a job, eight and skate, or if you're a 12-hour shift, you don't even have that option. But anyway, you can be at a job or you can really contribute to a job. And when you have people who feel like they belong, who know that their voice is heard and that their contributions matter, they're speaking up, they're solving problems, they're giving back to the organization's business goals. And that just doesn't happen when people have to hide who they are or don't feel like it's a safe space to speak.
Absolutely. Have you ever been in a room like where you're like, I probably shouldn't say what's on my mind? That's like me 100% of the time. And probably, you know, a lot of that, that's probably, we'll say 60% warranted, but no, I'm kidding. But
yeah, but people speak up and then feel like it's shut down or it doesn't matter. So there's so much that people can do to make sure that voice is celebrated and rewarded, especially when it comes to solving problems and creativity. because everyone benefits if they get to share those things. So
absolutely. Yeah. And that should really be encouraged. Speak up, speak your mind. I had some great mentors along the way that were like, no, tell us what you're really thinking, and really pushed me out of my shell when it came to that. Because before that, it was like, it was awkward being in situations, especially if you're in a group of all men and they're all like, seem to be very uniformed in what they think. And you're like, yeah. I don't know if I should interject my two cents here or not.
Yeah.
It's like the Homer Simpson meme. It's no.
Yeah. I think like whenever you're the only in the room, whatever that group is, and you have a different opinion, A, you feel like, you know, everyone's going to think because I'm this only person in this group, everyone thinks like that or whatever, or just that it's not as valuable because you don't fit in there. So we do a lot of working with companies to help them understand how those differences can be brought in to contribute to the greater innovation and creativity of that company. But it takes a whole lot of support from executives, management, as well as directly to the employees and really getting to each level.
Yeah, I was thinking about another thing that you just said about politicizing DEI.
Yeah.
Too. And it's like a lot of people you're right. So many companies, I feel like, are pulling back on their efforts right now. But it's, I don't know, if we're talking about data, which this conversation is rooted in people data, right? And you're still looking at the data doesn't lie as far as openings for people in manufacturing projections, right? So yeah. We're still going to have this gap is not going to go away. So why would you not do everything that you could for your business sake to fix this gap?
Absolutely. I think in manufacturing specifically, you're talking about, I know there's a lot of like really great advanced manufacturing companies. I've worked a lot more with kind of that more industrial space manufacturing companies, less advanced, more labor intensive than predominantly machining. And there's a lot of people, like we said, who maybe don't want to work really long hours anymore. I think there's a cultural shift away from that in general with the younger workforce. But when you look at underrepresented groups, there's a lot of people who really just want a great job with great pay to support their families and might be a little bit less focused on some of those other things. So I think manufacturing companies who aren't actively seeking those other groups, specifically like immigrant communities, especially there's so many different countries who have been training people in the trades, so really accessing them can be really crucial to expanding your workforce, offering good jobs, and getting people who are more comfortable in the space of that you're offering them. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't still shift towards that flexibility, but we should also make sure we're shifting our attention to people who can meet us where we're at a little bit more.
Absolutely. And if somebody's out there listening today and they are interested in getting the ball rolling on DEI strategies or how they can either leverage people data to impact the recruiting efforts or even meet their own workforce where they are in present day, what are some of the tips you would give them to get started on that process?
Yeah, I think data really is everything. My biggest thing is making sure that anything create or do or try to change to support your people should have a direct impact on them. So it should have come from what the workforce is asking for, where they've identified shortcomings. So making sure that your approach is tailored to you and not just looking at another company and saying, great, they're doing that. Should we do that? Because that's where you can mark sometimes, even though it can be a little bit easier. And then after you have your tailored approach, using data and formalized systems to ensure that equity is rooted into any of your processes so that it accesses everyone. And then also so that everyone is accountable to that system. I think there's a lot of initiatives or companies who want to do well. And so they start doing like making a change or offering some new support. But having it really formalized is what makes sure that all employees have access to it. And it comes down to that communication piece. Does everyone know about it? Does each work area know about it? Does each position level know about it? Because then you'll start to see maybe you have X representation of women or whatever group in your company as a whole, but you might have so much more representation in a certain area of your company, which may often you see minorities and underrepresented groups have higher representation in the lower paying jobs, even if they have low representation as a whole in that company. So making sure that it's formalized can help that it's going back to everyone and not just those loudest voices or those who have the easiest access. And I think that also just comes down to this transparency of being really transparent with your employees, you know, what you're offering and what you can and can't offer. Because especially if you're asking your employees, you want to hear from them, tell us what you need, what's going on, what can be better. There's going to be things that they want or ask for that you can't deliver on. But being able to be transparent and open with them allows them to go back on that journey with you. Because yes, they're not going to be like, oh, Carrie, great, I'm not getting a pay raise or whatever it is that they're asking for that you can't deliver on right now. At least they know that they were heard and that you looked at it, considered it, and you're, yes, doing this and not doing that. And when you can revisit things as well.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Just being transparent, honest, and a lot of marketing gurus that I have on the show would say, just be the more yourself you are, essentially, the more of your tribe you're going to attract. And I think that kind of works with recruiting too. You just have to be absolutely transparent. You've got to let go of the people pleasing, let it go.
Yeah. Cause right? You don't want to bring people in who can't match what you're offering. If what you're offering isn't exactly, if you're not telling them exactly what you're offering or what it's going to be like to work here, because then they're ultimately going to leave. We've found you have to be honest with them. You have to show them what it's going to be like, and you let them know how you'll support them and let them know what you do want to improve in time, but also what you don't see going away for a while too, if it comes down to schedules or whatever means the most to those people.
For sure. As far as like communication and maybe being transparent and all these things that you're mentioning on getting started, are there any tools that you recommend for that? Or if I wanted to do that, how would I go about doing that? Would I create, we used to do Survey Monkeys back in the day. You remember those? Create something like that? Or what's like the best tool?
I guess for employee engagement, there's a variety of tools, and there's employees who offer like specialized programs and they can do the analysis for you. If you have data analysts in-house, you can even use something as simple as SurveyMonkey to ask different questions and then break down how do different groups respond, what were the rates. So there's a lot you can do for free or not for free based on what your specific cost point is. But yeah, I think using surveys and asking people and then having data analysts to measure that. But as far as communication, we find we're really focused on both the ground level communication and then also the more like technological ideal method of communication. So I've talked with a lot of other frontline companies who deal with how do we just make sure our union employees know about it? We offer this great new program, and the last thing you want to hear is, oh, I had no idea. And I had a need for that. And I didn't access it, and they're frustrated and leave, or they're just frustrated in general. And we really do everything down from walking around and putting up flyers and posters to utilizing management to communicate regularly on the job when there's new announcements to those like TV programs and emails. And I think you just have to over communicate and try to hit it from all channels, or somebody's not going to get their email or didn't see this flyer or didn't, that their manager forgot that day. So as annoying as it is, and it's not streamlined as it is, just sending it from as many options as you can.
I'm going to shamelessly plug, because I really do the product, because I like the texting feature. I'm a big texter. Yeah. And in recruiting, when I'm sourcing candidates, I don't hardly even email anymore. I don't call anyone. I just text them, and they like text me right back. So crazy. But Seki has that texting feature in it. And I'm like texting, because it's just like instant. And I get immediate responses. I don't use that for recruiting, but if I had a need for employee engagement, I think that would be a good option.
Absolutely.
It's such an easy thing to do. Do you text? Are you a texter? I'm a texter though. See?
Yes, I do. And I think you do find that like everyone knows how to text, even though maybe not everyone knows how to like send an email or find their email out from their phone. Maybe they know it on their computer, but not on their phone, but like everyone knows how to text. So yeah, I love Seki is one organization that has a recognition tool, an employee engagement tool that goes right back to the employee, and you don't have to wonder. There's certain things that you want to text employees about every, and there's certain things where we use a lot of like safety alerts and things like that over text. So
if you
text too much, then you're like, make sure you see the important ones also. Just make sure they're always looking. But I have found that's the most effective way to communicate, but it has to be used properly at the right times.
Yeah, everybody's big on that texting. I don't know. It's crazy. That's a recruitment tip. If anybody is out there listening that's like actively recruiting jobs right now, text them. Do not call them. Do not email them. Text them.
Yeah, I think the younger generation is often just they're not as comfortable like with those in-person interactions because it's they've had such like a virtual experience. So having to do like a phone call or something is much more intimidating and less normal and routine for that Gen Z workforce than just a text. You can answer it on your own time and no one's looking at your face or watching. You can say exactly what you want to say. There's a lot of benefits.
Well, it's just so quick. And then it's okay. I can go back to what I was focused on. That's what I like. I don't know. So I think text is definitely a huge thing, but I've got one more question for you if you have time
for
that. Okay. In 2030, we're almost to 2025, which is
5 years away. So
for those that need to hear it, we're almost to 2025. But when it comes to the workforce and how we're changing in manufacturing and being more innovative, what are some of your predictions for over the next 5 years and how we value our workforce? And what are you hoping comes true?
Yeah, I think we hear so much how there was a culture and work culture shift with the pandemic, with especially so many organizations who did, you know, go virtual or hybrid during that time. Some manufacturers may have for their engineers or their office staff, but obviously most did not for their on-site hourly production staff. But I do think that you just continue to see this importance that came out of COVID for flexibility. And I think that's not going away. So yes, you do see a lot of companies bringing people back into the office or expecting you to be there most of the time. But we continue to have a pushback from employees of, yeah, I don't need to be home 100% of the time because I can't do my job at home, but they do want to be home one day a week or be able to take a half day sometimes or have a doctor's appointment one day if they can log on from their computer and do some things from home or have that flexibility. That's huge. But then outside of the office space in the manufacturing, I think flexibility will continue to hit in terms of that start time, end time, or we were talking about a little bit before. So it's, can I come in a half an hour later today so I can take my kid to work, or offering different things like that for different people and continuing to prioritize paid time off so that, yes, if you maybe can't offer someone a different schedule, do they have paid or unpaid time that they can take that hour to go to a doctor's appointment or to pick someone up or to have an emergency with your family and go be able to address that and be with them for that time? So I think flexibility will be that key that we see. And I think the other thing that you see a lot in the talent side is this loyalty shift. I think, especially in manufacturing, we've had a culture of, we've had a lot of long-term employees who are really loyal to their company and they're there through the great times and the hard times. And whether or not they're offered everything that is the dream for employment, they feel the connection of what they have received, that loyalty. But I think more and more we're seeing younger generations looking for the loyalty from the company, almost like the reverse of that. So it's more, I'm going to be here every day. Like, you owe me those benefits. You owe me that flexibility or the professional development opportunities. They want a company who's going to be loyal to them long-term more than they're willing to offer being loyal long-term without seeing those ongoing interactions and benefits.
What do you think is going to build loyalty back between companies and people? Or do you think have we like crossed that bridge, like between the young generations and manufacturing? I wonder, this is the kind of stuff I stay up thinking about.
Oh, absolutely. I think like some of the biggest things that we see employees looking for are just general management support. Again, people leave if their management's not there for them. Having someone who supports you or having the ability to speak up about it and resolve that if someone isn't supporting you. And then, yeah, I think flexibility. So if you are saying, yeah, you can go pick up your kid every Tuesday, Thursday at this time, like that does mean a lot because that's something you can't get at any job. So I think loyalty comes from, or building back that loyalty for the employee comes from standing out across your industry peers and really seeing people as the people that they are who have work-life to balance and meeting them where they're at. Otherwise, if you can go somewhere where you can take care of your family, take care of your own needs and go to work, that's just a better, people don't feel like they have a choice often. It's just like the only choice is to go where they have that.
I love that. That's true. Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you, Sophie. I appreciate that answer. That I think you're on to something there.
For sure. Yeah, it's a whole other thing to ensure you offer flexibility in the ways that meet both your business goals and your employees' goals, having it forefront, communicating it with them and communicating back to them what you can or can't do and when is the steps you can take until you can get to your dream goal, the dream flexibility you want to offer everyone.
For sure. For those that are listening to the episode today that want to connect with you, maybe they're interested in learning more about Philly Shipyard.
Yeah.
Listeners, how can they get in touch with you? What is your best point of contact?
So I'm on LinkedIn. My name is Sophie Beerley. I'm also, my work email is full access to anyone who wants to reach out to me. I love getting to know other businesses and other community organizations who are doing great work for their employees or looking how to do it better. And my email is just my first and last name. So sophie.beerley@phillyshipyard.com. And I'm sure you'll spell my last name in the description because it's B-E-B-I-E. Now I'm going to misspell my last name so no one else is going to stand a chance.
So for those listening, you can also find Sophie's information linked to the show notes as well. But Sophie, I really appreciate the conversation today. And for everyone else out there in the Workforce 4.0 community, thank you so much for listening and your support. If you have a minute, just feel free to give our little show here a review. In the meantime, we'll see you next time on Workforce 4.0.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you, everyone, for listening.